Welcome, everyone, to the Advanced Sports Analytics Podcast. It's a massive slate for Wednesday, February 24th. I'm here with Stuart Gibson from Advanced Sports Analytics and our special guest, Siege. Siege, thanks so much for joining today.
Hey, no problem, Brandon. Glad to be here.
So we were all together at the Super Draft party in Vegas. It was a lot of fun. It was sort of harking back to the old days of big, extravagant DFS finals. I want to ask you about something that you mentioned to me during the finals. You said that the DFS ecosystem was drying up because Top Shots was taking all the money. And when you told me that, I thought it was completely insane. But then I've been sort of comparing the metrics of Top Shot volume with what seems to be happening in the DFS ecosystem, which is, I would say, as dry as we've ever seen it. I mean, I've seen sort of bonus offers flowing around, and it seems to be overlaying pretty significantly. Like last night, FanDuel had a great contest. It overlaid quite a bit. There just seems to be possibly the driest DFS ecosystem I have seen for this time of year. And I'm wondering if you could go through your views on the correlation, because in my mind, it's one of two things. It's Top Shots, or it's the fact that the NBA season is sort of quietly a dumpster fire. I would say that if I've been watching games, by the way, for our DFS players out there, Stuart and I are very strongly quantitative in orientation. But if there's ever been a season where it's important to watch games, it's this season. There's so much happening that you can only pick up with the eyeball test. I would really say serious DFS players should be watching games this year. But the season is quietly a dumpster fire. I mean, it's between injuries, COVID issues, and then what I'm seeing is that Because the teams are under such strict protocols with regard to COVID, they have limited amounts of practice time and workout time. And it's leading to a lot of like quiet tanking. I don't know, maybe you played two slates ago, everyone was on the the Houston guys, and it was very frustrating to watch that game. Maybe we're getting too deep in the weeds, but there have been some very clear motivational issues this season that seem to relate to COVID protocols. So maybe you could give your take. Why is the DFS ecosystem a little bit on the dry side right now? Is it Top Shots? Is it a bad NBA season? Go.
I think it's a combination of both, right? I think that this season has been crazy. We've seen some teams literally use games as practice time. You know, last night, for example, Karl-Anthony Towns checks back in the game down 29 points in the fourth quarter because the new coach wanted to see what he could do next to certain players. And that the lack of practice time due to the COVID protocols has led teams to basically treat games where they're down as glorified practice time. And it's led to lack of defensive fundamentals. And so that's just led to these monstrous scores. From players, like when a player gets hot, yet to see a team just go, okay, like, here's an idea. Let's try to stop him. There's like, nah, we'll just let him do whatever he wants. We don't care. So that's led to kind of a boring NBA product, whether that's COVID, whether that's the play-in games, and everyone knows that's good that they're going to make the playoffs or at least the play-in. And then, you know, you have the Top Shots phenomenon, which is, you know, a lot of the DFS guys were kind of the first ones in the door there, right? And when you hand the DFS guy an opportunity, they're going to take it and maybe go a little too far. And so there's a bunch of players I know that I think are just kind of like, you know, I probably have a little too much invested in Top Shots, and this NBA season's kind of crazy, so I'm just going to scale back a little bit.
And wouldn't you say in general there has been historically, or there should be a positive correlation between the Bitcoin price and DFS action? Like typically, basically in January and February, the Bitcoin price doubled. So you would have thought that sort of leads to more DFS action in general. It hasn't been the case this year.
Yeah, that definitely has in the past. I just think people just got kind of just fed up with the COVID protocols, right? It's just tough. Like anytime you've got a guy, you know, 9 p.m. or later, it's just like you have to have multiple slots available because you just have no idea what's going to happen. And that's just, it kind of sucks, right? You have to be around all the time. Like you just have to be around all the time watching games, paying attention. And who really wants to do that 5-6 nights a week? You know, it's a little bit different than the past where it's like, yeah, the odds of a guy getting scratched are small. I can just, you know, do something and turn on alerts on my phone.
Yeah. And one thing I've noticed this season is that in past seasons, a purely data oriented approach would work. And this season is one where projection models are a little bit challenged just because the season, it does seem to be just fundamentally different. Like, as you said, people are sort of using the games as practice time and there does seem to be some tanking going on. So you do have to kind of watch. And I've just noticed that people who are a little bit more attuned watching games, following news, they've been making better lineups than people that have been going off projection systems. I mean, last night was a pretty good example where last night I did not do well last night. But the kind of plays that did, Saban Lee, that would be one that a projection model would not have you on. That would just be a watching games. You would come upon that play, sort of a crucial piece. And then Towns, as you mentioned, projection models were not going to be high on, but one might have guessed based on new coach trying to look good first time out and that would be even in the absence of a blowout, or as it turned out, he got there in a blowout, but you could have guessed that something had changed there with the new coach in town and that might've been a great play. And then kind of Houston, everyone was on Wall and Gordon on Monday. Those were the exact guys you shouldn't have been on. As long as you were anywhere but Wall and Gordon, you probably would have had a good day on Monday. And then again, like following deep in the Houston Rockets streets, like deep in the beat writers and Twitter, you could have guessed that would have been a tanking game, kind of.
Yeah, I was just kicking myself. I was watching a game actually out in Vegas. It was the Rockets and the Hornets game. And it was the first time that I blatantly saw Houston try to lose a game. Like they went up, like Charlotte went on something like a 20-1 run the first 7 minutes of the first quarter. And Ben McLemore had like 18 points in 7 minutes in the first half, just never came back. And I'm watching this game and I'm just like, they are trying to lose. And I wish I had just like kept that mental philosophy the last 2 weeks, because I think I could have been 2 weeks ahead of the trend had I just trusted what I was watching. Because since then, you've seen the rotations again. Like they're not trying to win. They're trying to tank. They owe a pick. They don't want to pay the pick up. Just wish I had been like 2 weeks early on it, because I could have saved myself from Wall and Gordon.
Yeah, I've been in the same situation this season where I've frequently not trusted my eyeball test and intuition, and it's been costly. Like for instance, last night, obviously a perfect setup for the Kings. Watching the previous Sacramento game, it was sort of obvious that I love playing Fox. I love to play Fox. And it's served me very well, like in the right context, playing Fox. But watching the previous game, it's clear that he was a little hampered. Like he's got all the leg braces on, and it's not always necessarily meaningful, but he just wasn't looking especially spry. And he didn't seem to have it. Meanwhile, Halliburton was going nuts, and he's been on the ascendancy in general in quantitative terms as well, usage rates and all that. But by the eyeball test, Monday, Fox looked not spry, not 100%, and Halliburton looked ferocious. And of course, yesterday, like, I don't know, you sort of go by the projection, and this is the type of game Fox, and you play Fox, and then afterwards you think, fuck, why don't I trust my intuition and play Halliburton?
Or you talk yourself into Buddy Hield as like, oh, you know, this will be the game Fox facilitates Hield. He'll have one of his 30-point games. Like, no, you could have just played Halliburton for 300 or more. Could have done that instead.
Yeah, Hield now is sort of deep contrarian, I feel. He always is a great DFS play just based on his sort of bipolar distribution. But with the ascendancy of Halliburton, he's a tough play. All right, so let's jump into a little super draft tonight. Super draft, they're testing the waters with the $100 contest. Hopefully, my hope is that they now have some higher dollar contest, like 100 or 200 per lineup, in addition to the big contest, which is usually $15 per lineup, and the small dollar, the $4. All of the listeners of our podcast, they don't need to be reminded at this point that Superdraft is 100% the place to play, because as part of an aggressive growth strategy, there's overlay every night. Like, it's sort of expected ROI of 5% plus for average lineups, because there's overlay every night. So for me, it's just like complete no-brainer. Everyone should be playing there. All right, so Stuart, maybe you could intro today's slate and get us going at the guard.
Yeah, so it's an interesting slate. I'm just looking at pricing. You know, there's three guys at the low multiplier floor of one. You know, LeBron James checks out. And then, you know, next to LeBron is LaVine and Towns, which to me, you know, just seems odd. Like, I don't really picture them as true kind of 1x multiplier guys. And, you know, I just think in the slate in general, there's kind of a dearth of your elite kind of raw projected players. You know, no Doncic, no Giannis, no Jokic. So I don't know. It does seem interesting that there's kind of a real lack of super stable, like low multiplier guys. As such, I would expect that, like, if I just run through our top 20 optimals, I would expect exposure to kind of condense on the mid to high multiplier tier. That seems to be the case. Like, you know, LeBron is appearing in 90% of those top 20, but, you know, really no appearances by like Kat or LaVine. Some of the more preferential players are in kind of this mid to high multiplier tier, guys like Zion, guys like DeJounte Murray. So I do think something to keep in mind for this slate. You know, usually there are some tempting low multiplier plays, but in this particular slate, some of the lower multiplier guys just to me don't really seem like guys I want to be rostering at 1x. So that's, I think, something to keep in mind. You know, the San Antonio early on is appearing to be kind of the spot where a lot of value can open up. You know, DeRozan out among other Spurs, and I think you know, it should open up pretty good usage opportunities for guys who are in the starting lineup previously, and also open up, you know, extra minutes for guys who previously have been as part of that second unit who might be starting. So as mentioned,
hold like, on, we're starting. Let me see. Are we? The San Antonio game has been. Let me see. Is it on this slate? I don't think it's on the slate.
Yeah, it is.
It's an 8 p.m. start. So,
it's on the slate.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it looks like 8 p.m. start. So, yeah, I mean, Murray's a guy that jumps out to me as, you know, high mid-tier multiplier just should be in a pretty high minutes, high usage role, given the amount of injuries on that team. You know, 1.35 kind of categorizes him as a mid-tier multiplier. Yeah, I guess that holds. I mean, you're seeing a fair amount of guys well below him at, like, you know, Shea Gilgis, 1.15 has previously been in kind of the 1.2 to 1.3 range. So it does seem that, like, guys are just getting scaled, I guess, down in terms of their multiplier. Murray seems like, you know, a strong guy. Booker, you know, as guys are moving down in multiplier, Devin Booker is a guy who's kind of held at this 1.35 mark. To me, that seems like a guy where, like, if LaVine is sliding up, if Shea Gilgeous-Alexander is sliding up, or I guess sliding down in multiplier, I'm surprised that Booker isn't kind of with them in that multiplier reduction, but he's still stuck at 1.35. To me, that seems like a really great price on him at the guard position. Mitchell has shrunk a little bit in his multiplier. He's down to 1.25. Still seems like a pretty good price, but I think he was a more prevalent mix in our optimals when he was at kind of the 1.3 to 1.4 range. But yeah, those are some guys in kind of the mid-tier multiplier that I think have a good ceiling, given, you know, they're not at this or near the multiplier floor, but, you know, also project raw pretty well. Brandon Siege, any guys to you at the guard position that are standing out?
Well, Siege, you know, Rozier is trying to pump up his Top Shots price, so he's a decent value on the night at 1.45. He might try to get off a few extra.
It's a tough matchup against Chris Paul, obviously, but certainly a guy that has upside at this multiplier, right? His usage has gone through the roof with no Devontae Graham. So he's a guy that definitely has been kind of consistently in play, and a guy that I was kind of, like, really overweight on for a while, especially when he's like at 1.55, I thought was a steal on him for a while, and adjusted down a little bit, but he's still a pretty strong option. And then if you kind of want to get a little crazy, you know, 1.8x Patty Mills, like we talked about it, the Spurs are down to 9 or 10 guys. He's a guy that if he gets 30 plus minutes, which is what I'm projecting him for, could flirt with 30, 35 points, especially on super draft where you got those extra 3 point points. If he gets 7 or 8 threes, definitely could quietly be that random guy at the guard spot for me.
Yeah, Booker is seemingly a smash, and I would kind of want to play one of Conley or Mitchell. And then Murray seems like kind of the best guy. I do worry about super condensed ownership tonight because a lot of the top values are guard only eligible. I think a lot of the guard ownership will be condensed among a combination of 5 or 6 guys. I don't know. Would you agree with that, Stuart, that the ownership pool will be somewhat tight at the guard position?
Yeah, I mean, that would figure to make sense. I think we actually saw that last night where, you know, Jokic was just so massively owned because there was a real lack of, like, good center options, and kind of the forward center flexes that got, you know, ownership, like Embiid and stuff, you know, they had ownership because of you know, the multi-position eligibility, but there is so much kind of single position eligibility at the top that I don't know. I mean, I guess it would condense around, like, maybe 5 or 6 guys, but I also think that will prevent any one guy from garnering massive ownership. So I think that's something to note.
What I would say tonight, actually, the forward position is the more interesting position because we have so many different ways you can go. Stuart, what are some of your favorite plays at forward?
Yeah, I mean, Zion's projecting quite well. You know, to me, he feels like a guy that should be in the 1x multiplier list. But, you know, he's down at 1.2, as where guys like LaVine and Kat are kind of putting that 1x ceiling circle. He, I think, projects as a really strong value. Figure he'll be pretty popular. Thad Young, we have a super strong projection on as, 1.55x multiplier. Think that is noteworthy and I think could be a route to go. I don't think of him as a guy who typically garners a ton of ownership. I think Horford projects favorably, typically a pretty popular player. Bam projects favorably, and that could improve if any combination of Dragic and Hero are ruled out tonight. So those would be some guys I would keep an eye on as lock approaches.
Where are you seeing it, Siege?
Yeah, I think you guys have mentioned it kind of like in the low multiplayer guys. There's just like, it's tough. Like I wanted to be on Towns, and then you log on, you see the 1x multiplier, and it's just really tough to get there. But the guys like Pascal, I think 1.2, similar kind of ceiling to Zion. He'll come in lower owned, but coming off last night, won't be that much lower owned. I think we're going to see a lot of ownership in the 1.2 to 1.3 range. I think all those guys are pretty viable, even Al Horford 1.4. So if you're looking to get off the path, you're going to have to find a high multiplier guy that kind of just has a game. And it's really tough to see that at the forward spot. There's a couple, but nothing that you feel super confident in.
So Siege, when you sense that there is kind of a going to be popularity among this, let's say 1.2 to 1.4 range, sounds like the preference is to differentiate by going up in multiplier as opposed to down, right? Or is that just simply driven by, pricing and kind of players today?
Yeah, it's pretty slate specific, but normally when I see a good piece of chalk at 1.2 or 1.3, my goal is to go higher. Yeah. Because it's like, if they put up 50 to 60 point, like if they beat their projection, right? It's like, okay, if you go lower in multiplier, now that guy has to go 75, 80 fantasy points, and you just can't count on that from anyone. So my tendency is to try to find a guy who I think has ceiling with the higher multiplier. So, maybe like, for example, you fade Halliburton last night, but you play Norman Powell, right? And Norman Powell gets you there by not being quite as good, but has the higher multiplier. I don't see anyone as good as Norman Powell today. I guess Wendell Carter Jr. is probably the closest thing to it. Centers against Minnesota this year have just been an absolute, you could just do a layup drill at the rim. And he comes in at 1.6. So I think there's some solid pricing there, but you can't count on him to get you 18 real life points. So kind of a mixed bag there. But it's the high multiplier guys with those steals and blocks too, because like 3 is a lot, but 4.5 is a lot more. So you find a guy who can get you a few of those, and next thing you know, you have 12 or 13 points just out of nowhere.
Let me ask you one related to the eyeball test, and this is a blocks guy. What is wrong with DeAndre Ayton?
It's Frank Kaminsky starting next to him. His usage is just nothing. It's been averaging like 0.8 fantasy points a minute next to Frank Kaminsky in the starting lineup, and they start each half that way. So if half your time you're a 0.8 fantasy point per minute guy, it's just tough to get back to being the guy. Especially with Paul and Booker healthy, he's kind of like the third banana there. So yeah, he's the guy that has ceiling, but been one I've been just avoiding for a while now.
Yeah, he's been a great disappointment. And 1.35, it's worth a scattering for sure, but it's not quite there. I will give you a contrarian take based on the eyeball test. I will say that LeBron has had a streak of, I think, 34 games of being questionable and playing sometime real soon. And tonight could be the night. Also, the spread, just eyeballing it, I mean, it's roughly correct, but it's a little bit heavy.
I'll stop you there. It's a national TV game. He's not going to sit this one.
Yeah. It's coming soon, though. It's coming soon. He is overworked, and it's going to happen. He needs to sit some games. So I don't know. You're probably right. It will not be tonight, but keep it in the back pocket for the next 2 weeks or pre All-Star game. I guess
I got a game for you. Can I just call it out right now?
Okay.
March 3rd against the Kings on the road, back to back, is the one he'll sit. It's a late game too. It's the it's actually his next game that's not on national TV.
Okay, so you're calling it that's going to be a late game where he's going to be questionable,
and he's going to sit
the 37th time, and he's going to sit.
It's right before the All-Star break too. I think it's their last game before the break.
Okay.
That makes sense. I mean, I don't know. Even if LeBron is playing, like a guy like Kuzma has just been getting a ton of minutes in the absence of Anthony Davis, like, you know, I'd be fine going with Kuzma even if LeBron plays. And, you know, I think Schrader's absence is not an insignificant one for some of these, you know, ancillary Lakers pieces. Like Schrader kind of emerged as the number two in terms of just usage and shot attempts when Davis went down. And now that both those guys are down, you know, I do think there is a lot of shot taking opportunity that's opened up for some of these new Lakers starters. Like Kuzma's a guy that we're projecting quite favorably, and he's been pretty solid in the last few games. I know he got a overtime boost against Washington, but still in games prior to that overtime, you know, has been up over 34 minutes in each of the last three games, including that OT one. So, you know, I think he's a direction we could go, you know, even if LeBron does play.
Stuart, wouldn't you just rather take shots on these San Antonio Spurs guys? Because we could sit here and try to project this situation all day. End of the day, it's, you know, they have 10 healthy guys, max, and a couple of them are G League guys against the Thunder defense, which is one of the worst defenses in the NBA. High multipliers. Isn't that just the spot? Like, wouldn't you rather take a spot on that instead of the Lakers?
Yeah, I mean, but I do want to, I think, impose some sort of Spurs cap. Like, I'm a little hesitant to just roster, like, you know, three or four Spurs in the same lineup. Does that seem like a mistake, or given the high multiplier, is kind of a Spurs onslaught type lineup in play, you think?
It really depends who they start at center, because I did, like, I loaded up your guys' projections. So just, I had a general idea, and I had it the way you guys did at the start. And then I read a couple articles where they said like 10 guys with three centers. And the only guy I could think of as the third center is Aldridge. So if they're not going to play Aldridge at the four, then you start looking at Lonnie Walker, DeJounte Murray, Patty Mills minutes as kind of floor being 30. So I wish I kind of knew what they were going to start with. Now, if they start Aldridge next to Poeltl, I think, you know, it definitely, there's definitely more variance there, but I'm really intrigued to see what they do, because I would start it with Aldridge at the four, but maybe they think he just can't anymore.
Yeah, I would say in cash, it's a perfect opportunity to play a lot of Spurs. In cash, you actually like the fact that your ceiling is capped and your variance goes down when you play high equity guys that tend to take from each other. So I would use the opportunity in cash to have a high, median, low variance approach with a fairly heavy Spurs lineup. In tournaments, my intuition would be two, perhaps three, but mostly you want to pick two. And you have some pretty clear, like, either ors. Like, I would say, like, Murray or Mills, Aldridge or Lyles. I would try to keep it to two for an 8-game slate. That makes sense to me.
What about a 6-game slate like we have over on Superdraft?
My bad. I was thinking, I knew we were,
yeah,
I knew we were,
I know,
nine at 7:30. I didn't realize there were three 7:30 games. I would say for me, still, it would be typically two, with a scattering of three. Certainly you wouldn't want to play, to me, four, because let's say the $15, the marquee tournament, to win that, as we've talked about many times on this show, you typically have one center spot, three forward spots, and three guard spots. You don't have to have the top three guards, the top three forwards, and the top center, but you have to kind of smash if you're going to win the tournament. You kind of have to hit 7 or 9 or 8 of 9. In other words, for the guard spot, on a night like tonight, there's a decent chance that you have to go 3 for 3. Like, you have to have the top three adjusted scoring guards. And on forward, you have to have possibly all of the top three, maybe 2 of 3. So to hit in that way, it's just very unlikely that it's like Murray and Mills in the top three guard spots, adjusted scoring. Granted, they have a great opportunity, they have high multiplier, but for me, I would probably say either or.
Yeah, that's, I mean, typically how I've thought about some of these groups. And I think your flexibility for increasing number of players on the same team grows as those multipliers grow, which, you know, with the Spurs, you do have, like, you're not trying to roster LeBron and Anthony Davis, where, you know, those guys just need to put up insane raw values. So, you know, I do think definitely going with at least two Spurs, or, you know, going with two Spurs is, I mean, very in play. Three is kind of where, you know, I do get a little concerned, but to be honest, have a little less experience with kind of towing that line. I would guess there is kind of a bit of a gray area as to, you know, what is too many players in the same team for tournament builds. So I don't know. To me, it's probably somewhere between 2 and 3.
I can't remember a situation where I've ever done more than three.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm not sure that situation exists, to be honest.
Yeah, it'd have to be like a micro slate. Yeah, it'd have to be unique circumstances, which I'm not sure that we have in this particular slate.
Not with the Pistons being on the slate as well.
And most people are going to do the either or at guard of Mills or Murray, and then at forward they'll do Lyles or Aldridge. And Lonnie Walker is always the forgotten man, and he's typically not a good play. He does show up though in spots like exactly like this, and I kind of like to play him in these spots. I don't know. I listen to this one podcast every day, Locked on Fantasy Basketball with Josh Lloyd. It's convenient because he's super funny and he posts in Australia time, so it's always like there in the morning if you want to listen to a basketball podcast. And I always find it funny. He hates Lonnie Walker. He thinks he's not a great NBA player. But every once in a while, he has to apologize because Lonnie Walker will have these games where he rips open the stat sheet. And it tends to occur kind of on nights like this. And he's not on anyone's radar. So I like to play him on nights like tonight. It's frustrating, like, 70% of the time, 80% of the time, but 20 or 30% of the time, you're super happy.
He actually drew a start because DeRozan missed the game they played against Oklahoma City earlier this season. 36 minutes, 24% usage, put up 24 real life points, and tacked on some peripherals, put up 65 super draft points. And this situation is probably even more depleted than that. And it's kind of just a nice Lonnie Walker game too. He's going to have to guard Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, so he's going to be on the floor. And we talk about a guy who can get you those steals and blocks in like big numbers. Lonnie Walker can be that guy if he's got it going on. So I'm with you. He's a guy.
Yeah, he's super fun. He's super fun to play and like to watch. He's not a wallflower. Like he's doing it. Like he's aggressive and it's a good watch if you're on him in fantasy.
He will not PJ Tucker you. I can promise you that.
So moving on to the center position, we touched on Poeltl, touched on Ayton as kind of a bearish play. Any other guys that are jumping out to you guys at the center position?
I'm probably going to be too stubborn on Towns and make sure I have someone. Like, just, I know it's a 1x multiplier, but if I could just draw up a dream scenario for Karl-Anthony Towns, it'd be 38 minutes against this Bulls team, against no one that can really step out to the three-point line. I mean, Wendell Carter doesn't have the size to handle him. Thad Young certainly doesn't. I know I'm going to be looking for kind of a monster night, but, you know, you talk about the eye test, and he just looked so good last night. I have a really hard time not having any. It's probably not the right play, but I'm just going to have to pull the trigger on some, because if he goes for 70 and I don't have him, I'd just be banging my head against the wall. But other than that, crazy idea.
I don't think it's that crazy, by the way. It's kind of a weak night at center. I don't think it's that crazy. And the only thing that makes me hesitate is that, as you mentioned, when you get blocks at FanDuel Super Draft scoring 3 points per block, that's huge. And then when you get the multiplier on there, like 1.7, 1.8, it's massive. And centers tend to have pretty wide distributions of outcomes anyway. So altogether, it just makes it where, what is the probability that Towns is the top scoring center? It's kind of low, just because his median projection looks okay, but when you incorporate range of outcomes, it's just very likely that one of the high multiple guys passes him. So really the only situation where he comes out on top is where he posts a massive raw performance. Those games happen, but they're not super likely, that 65 fantasy point kind of game. So anyway, Stuart, how do you see it?
I mean, it does seem a little bit of a weak center slate. I don't know. My preference would probably be to go towards one of the mid to high multiplier guys, like Horford, or I think Bam could be in a pretty good spot if Hero and or Dragic miss again, preferably Hero. Plumlee has, had a real solid role and been kind of a solid producer, although he does kind of lack a massive ceiling, but at 1.6, he's got a nice multiplier attached to him. These would be kind of guys I think might be looking at.
You guys aren't worried about the Al Horford minutes? Because I keep looking at his minutes since people got healthy, and we're back to high 20s Al Horford minutes no matter what. And it's hard for me to see how he breaks a slate in 28 minutes at 1.4.
Yeah, that is a fair point. I guess his minutes have been below 30 since Shea returned. So that might be something to be concerned about.
Yeah, in general, I'm not a Horford guy just because the distributions are not super friendly. He doesn't have those outliers often enough. I mean, he's burned me plenty, but I typically don't love him. I do think Bam, speaking of motivations and so forth, it does seem, as a Miami person, I will say that it does seem that Miami really wants to win, and Bam and Jimmy really want to win, and they are motivated. They're gonna have some good games. I think that Bam has been underperforming relative to like the expectations that he has for himself and the team would have. I think that he will have some good performances leading into the All-Star break.
I think this game's closer than people think too. I know Toronto's on the back-to-back, but this is Miami's first game back after a 7-game road trip. I think Miami might start a little slow and create a 4-quarter game here. So I kind of like the idea of Bam here too. Center is really weak though. Like, I'm looking for like the high multiplier guy that I've just like could even sprinkle in, and I just don't even see one. Like, there's nothing really after Wendell Carter and Aldridge that I just even think is viable.
Yeah, it's the thing with super draft scoring that, like, on say DraftKings, if you get the 3K center who's clearly a high value that people expect to score like 22 or whatever, it's not much of a stretch for him to score 28, and that's really nice if you have it, but sometimes like 30 is not in the cards. And on super draft scoring, if you have that person at sort of a 1.8 type multiple, it's like, even when they have that great night that you'd be thrilled with on DraftKings, where they have 28 DraftKings points or whatever, they're not getting enough to win the center position. So a lot of times I find that those high multiple centers are kind of out of play.
It's nice not to deal with those value plays, though. That is the best part about super draft. It's like, you know, unless like you think the guy has 30 to 35 point upside and they're 2x, you just don't have to worry about it. It's so enjoyable when it's like, oh, there's like these 9 value guys that are going to be 3k, and you're like, I don't have to deal with them anymore, thank god.
yeah it is great to not have all of the tinkering.
Yeah, it's been I deal pretty heavily with our projections, and not having to deal with like figuring out rotation nuances and like really micro navigating, you know, how different min price guys fit in and kind of what their minute floor and ceiling considerations are, I think is pretty nice for super draft.
We have to mention Jakob Poeltl too, if he starts 1.55. He's a guy that can just absolutely put up a monster game, and we don't have a lot of those at the center spot, so I definitely wouldn't be avoiding him if he starts. Off the bench, I kind of think I would just cross him out. But if he starts, really strong play.
Yep. Yeah, I think we currently have him projected as our top post-multiplier value. That would be another guy you could consider with that Spurs mix.
And Wendell Carter had a strong game on Monday, a little bit of a difficult spot, but he has a 1.6 multiplier, and Gobert is a strong play at 1.25 multiplier.
Yep. Stewart. Yeah. In agreement with you on Gobert. Carter, probably I'll have to do a little more research on to develop a strong opinion on.
Monday was a much better setup, but he had an amazing first half and then
came off. I got you.
He's getting the opportunity now.
Yeah. Looks like 20
seems like a pretty high probability of being the slate winner.
He's an either or with Thad Young for me.
Yeah, Wendell Carter is.
Yeah. Kind of go either or there, because for Thad Young to get his minutes ceiling, like he's only played 20, 22, and 20 over his last three. Kind of need the bad Wendell Carter to show up for him to get to the 26 to 30 minutes you're probably going to need for him to get to that super draft winning score.
Yep.
So Siege, this was a lot of fun. I don't know what we have to do to talk you into being a guest in the future, but it would be excellent if you could join us again.
You got my cell. Just let me know.
All right.